Last month, the former CEO of Tyco Industries, Dennis Kozlowski, was charged with tax evasion for trying to avoid New York State sales tax on his purchase of paintings worth $13 million. Kozlowski isn't the first collector to be caught trying to avoid sales tax. Hotel owner Leona Helmsley spent 4 years behind bars, in part for failing to pay sales tax on sculptures. David Darcy reports that some of this country's most distinguished collectors managed to avoid income tax and sales tax while they built art collections and museums.
When New York art dealers heard that Dennis Kozlowski was charged with tax evasion, they suspected he was new to the market. Dealer Richard Feigen says experienced collectors would have remembered that hotel owner Leona Helmsley was tried, convicted, and imprisoned in 1989 for, among other things, ordering employees to write off a jade buffalo and a bust of her son as business expenses. Back in the 80s, Feigen says, Helmsley refused to pay the sales tax on paintings he sold her.
She simply said that when she made purchases, that she bought them with the tax included, meaning, I suppose, that it was up to the vendor to pay the tax.
Feigen's files were subpoenaed during the Helmsley investigation, but the dealer never faced charges. People with a lot more money and a lot more art than Leona Helmsley have faced government scrutiny. Right after the great stock market crash in 1929, banker Andrew Mellon bought masterpieces by Rembrandt and Vermeer while he was Secretary of the Treasury and deducted them from his income as charitable expenses. He bought 21 paintings from the Hermitage Museum in the Soviet Union at the bargain price of less than $7 million just before Congress enacted the 1931 Smoot-Hawley Tariff, which imposed stiff duty on all imports. Historian Robert Williams followed Mellon's collecting in his book, Russian Art and American Money.
He had probably what we might call insider information about what was happening on the tariff front, but he was also taking advantage of the timing on the other side. Stalin wanted to sell. He was desperate for hard currency, and certainly the fact that Mellon knew the tariff was coming, as he undoubtedly did, was a key factor, but not the only factor, I think, in the timing of the purchase of the paintings.
Publicly, Mellon denied spending millions of dollars on paintings when millions of Americans were on breadlines. On paper, he said he put the art in a trust that he said would endow a national museum someday.
Essentially, he'd set up his own charitable trust, which was virtually himself, and then gave the paintings to himself, that is, to that trust.
The paintings stayed in his homes. The Democratic Congress investigated him in 1935, exonerated him, and investigated him again. The inquests ended only after Mellon sent a letter to President Franklin D. Roosevelt promising to build a national gallery in Washington and to put his art there. Mellon died before the building went up and before his estate settled a tax bill for almost $700,000. Historian Robert Williams.
Dostoevsky once said, behind every great man is a crime. And I think in Mellon's case, if not a crime, certainly a lot of shenanigans going on behind all of these purchases. He was able to take advantage of Soviet weakness and desperation during the first five-year plan at exactly the time when the Depression drove the prices down and he knew tariffs were going up to do all of this.
The Andrew Mellon of the second half of the 20th century was Norton Simon, who lived in Los Angeles and bought art in London and New York. Simon often bought through tax-exempt foundations, but when he bought art in his own name, he used a California loophole exempting him from sales tax if he exhibited the paintings outside California for 3 months before bringing them into the state. Simon's biographer Suzanne Muchnick says the then little Phoenix Art Museum got first crack at showing some great pictures.
The Phoenix Art Museum seemed to be very, very happy to have the opportunity to exhibit these works that Norton Simon's latest purchases, and they happily put them on view, and the people of Phoenix could come to see them. And apparently the powers that be at the museum felt that that was sufficiently beneficial for them to go along with Simon's tax dodge, so to speak.
Eventually, museums around the country got a chance to show his tax-free purchases. The program even had a name, the Museum Without Walls, and Suzanne Muchnick says it was all legal.
He was not a greatly beloved individual, but neither was he a crook. He absolutely operated, within the bounds of the law. He took full advantage of his business acumen and the advice of platoons of tax attorneys to work these laws to his best advantage.
Simon was one of the first corporate raiders. He bought and sold art the way he bought and sold companies. Richard Feigen says the tax laws enabled Simon and collectors who followed his example to become important dealers in art.
They basically are dealers in collectors' clothes, which is a very clever thing to do because you get all the prerogatives of a collector. In other words, Norton Simon got first crack at things because he was this major collector and had consideration for museums that a dealer wouldn't get in terms of being considered a commercial person. He effectively took over a museum as a gallery at tax shelter and still bought and sold and didn't have any of the overhead and problems that a dealer has. So it was very clever. He was the most important dealer probably in the world, but called himself a collector.
Today's dealer collector is Steve Wynn. Since the mid-1990s, the legally blind gambling entrepreneur has bought more than $300 million of art. Some of that art was bought by Mirage Resorts, Wynn's former company. Some of it Wynn bought himself. When he faced paying Nevada sales tax on his personal collection, Wynn turned to the Nevada State Legislature, which passed a law making art purchases exempt from sales taxes if the works were on public view. John Smith, a columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, is author of Running Scared, an unauthorized biography of Steve Wynn.
The law was basically designed for Steve Wynn. It has been used by Steve Wynn. And if there is a great deal of private collecting going on, it certainly is going on off the record and out of the public eye.
Smith says sales tax breaks are often conceived to help nonprofits, but this one subsidized a corporate marketing strategy.
I would like to believe that suddenly everyone in Nevada was drinking with pinky fingers extended and suddenly had a very high interest in art. But the fact is that the acquisition of millions of dollars of paintings by these casino moguls was a direct attempt to market a certain level or a certain aura of class to the casino customer.
Collector Steve Wynn will enjoy his Nevada tax exemption at a new space, a hotel under construction named for the Picasso painting he owns, Le Rêve, or The Dream. Ordinary millionaires in New York dreaming of avoiding their state's 8.5% sales tax would do well to remember Leona Helmsley, says Richard Feigen. The dealer has some advice for them. Just pay the tax.
You know, there are rapists that are put out on probation. There are a lot of serious crimes committed, and they don't go to prison. I think that she suffered because of her high profile. She became a target, a very attractive target for prosecution. And I suppose as an example to others, the same thing is happening, I suppose, today with high-profile people. I think they are very much in the crosshairs of the prosecutors, and I think they should bear that in mind.
Prosecutors say the investigation into Dennis Kozlowski's tax evasion is continuing. He's now also charged with evidence tampering. For NPR News, I'm David Darcy in New York.